5. A sudden compulsion to hide welled up inside Alima's chest. Worried that her pursuers had found her after all, she peered over the top of the study carrel where she was working. In the front lobby, she saw only the same two GAG troopers who had been guarding the library when she arrived. They were leaning against the front desk, talking softly, and gazing into each other's eyes. A faint voice droned over the woman's comlink, but either the orders did not concern her, or Alima's force suggestion had fallen on ground more fertile than she had realized. The compulsion to hide became an entreaty to wait, then a premonition of trouble, and Alima realized the sensations were coming from outside herself. Someone was projecting those feelings so powerfully they had overspilled a battle meld and rippled out for just anyone to sense. Probably the Academy's GAG protectors were giving Jaina and her two lust toads more trouble than they had Alima, and that was a relief. The trio had been hounding Alima's trail since Roku Depot, and she had known it would be only a matter of time before they caught up and began to snoop around the Academy. Alima stretched her force awareness toward the guards, then focused her attention on the drone coming from the woman's comlink. "And her escort searching Academy grounds." The voice was male and assertive, no doubt that of the mission commander. "Don't interfere, but don't let them... the hostages." Hostages? Stunned to hear the term actually being used over a comm channel, Alima dropped back into her seat. She had known all along that the GAG troops were there to prevent the Academy from being used to foment resistance to Jason's coup, but she had never suspected he would actually be foolish enough to take the young ones hostage. It was a bold move, but also a rash one, far more likely to provoke Luke than to contain him. Alima did not understand how Jason could have made such a mistake. Until now, his stratagems had been nothing short of brilliant. He had won over the population of Coruscant and much of the rest of the Alliance with his tough-on-terrorists approach, and he had used his popularity to take personal control of nearly half the galaxy. So why had he made such a terrible blunder now? Why had he suddenly grown arrogant enough to believe he could threaten the Jedi Order and succeed? The answer, of course, was Lumia. Jason had not blundered until his mentor was killed. Then, within days of her death, he had overreached himself. Obviously, the Colonel still needed guidance, and Lumia had clearly foreseen that he would. Why else would she have allowed Alima to follow her to her asteroid hideout? Lumia had wanted to make sure that if she were gone, Alima would have the resources to carry on in her place. Alima linked her datapad to the archives computer she had been accessing, then downloaded the limited data she had found regarding the vessel she had inherited from Lumia. According to Jedi histories, Ship, it refused to reveal its name, so Alima just called it Ship, was an ancient meditation sphere, a sort of thinking starship that had at one time been used by Jedi and Sith alike. From what little the records had revealed, the meditation sphere was a sort of force-augmented control vessel, designed to amplify a commander's battle meditation abilities while also concealing his or her location from the enemy. The datapad displayed a message announcing that it had completed the download. Alima deactivated the data link and erased her access trail on the main computer, then tucked the datapad into its pouch on her utility belt and started toward the exit. The two guards were so taken with each other that they failed to notice her until she had passed the front desk and was halfway across the lobby.
"What the cark?" the male gasped. "Where do you come from?"
The woman was quicker to recover from her surprise.
"Halt!" she ordered. "Move those hands a centimeter, and I blast you!"
Alima turned to find a big Mersan power blaster pointed in her direction. She raised her hand anyway, and the guard pulled the trigger. The weapon issued a single soft click, and now it was the female's turn to gasp.
"What the cark?"
"There's nothing to be concerned about."
Alima waved her hand, then pulled a pair of power cells from her robe pocket.
"You gave these to us for safekeeping."
The woman scowled in suspicion.
"Why would I—" "You remember?"
Alima addressed herself to the man, who, as usual, was weaker-minded than his prospective mate.
"We're a friend of Jason's."
"It's okay, Tiz," the man said. "You remember. She's a friend of the Colonel's."
Tiz's scowl melted away, and she holstered her blaster.
"That's right." She smiled at the man. "I remember now."
"Good."
Alima would have force-tossed the power cells into Tiz's head for letting a male make up her mind for her, but it was important to keep her visit to the library a secret. If Jaina and her lust-toads learned that she had come to Ossus to use the Jedi library, they would find a way to identify the records she had accessed, and then they would know as much about ship as she did. Alima used the Force to float the power cells back to the lobby desk, at the same time backing toward the exit.
"You two have fun," Alima suggested. "The Colonel won't mind."
By the time she was out the door, the pair were pulling at each other's utilities. Confident that her slippery Force presence would rob their minds of any memory of her visit, she worked her way through the Academy gardens into the forest where ship was waiting. The hike up to its hiding place wasn't particularly difficult, even with Alima's damaged foot and useless arm. But it was an unpleasant reminder of the time she had spent injured and marooned on Tanoop, of all that had been taken from her. Every step into the night was a burning reminder of her duty to the balance and her obligation to set matters even between her and Leia Solo. As Alima approached the ravine where ship had concealed itself, the strong-willed vessel rose into view without waiting for a summons. It was fantastically hideous, a bloated orb with a web of raised veins pulsing over an amber-colored hull that could be opaque or transparent depending on its mood. It held its four wings folded flat against the sides of its round belly, and as it spun to face her, it looked to Alima like a giant disembodied brain. A very old giant disembodied brain.
"Ancient," Ship corrected.
A 2-meter section of hull melted into a ramp and extruded itself toward the bank where Alima was standing.
"And brainy enough to feel when the enemy is watching."
The reproach in Ship's thoughts was unmistakable, but Alima merely smirked and strolled up the ramp at her own relaxed pace. They had nothing to fear from these enemies, at least not at the moment. Wisely or unwisely, Jason had given them something more important to worry about than Alima Rar. Ship was doubtful, but it waited until Alima was kneeling inside, then sealed itself up and awaited a destination.
"Kan's sector,"
Alima said aloud.
"We assume you remember the coordinates of Lumia's asteroid."
Ship remained in the ravine, and the smoldering flame that seemed embedded in its bulkheads grew brighter and redder. It would serve as the Broken One's transport, because it had nothing better to do. But it had no intention of taking her to Kan's sector. Lumia would not have wanted Alima rifling through her home.
"Are you certain?"
As Alima spoke, she was using the Force to push sideways against Ship's resolve. trying not so much to challenge its decision as to merely shift its perspective. It was the same technique she had employed as the Dark Nest's Night Herald, one that she had used many times to control Unu Thul and his nest.
Lumia wanted us to continue her work with Jason.
Ship recoiled angrily from her mind touch. It had served masters more powerful than she could imagine. Did she really think it would not feel a simple thought, Veer? It was insulted beyond expression. Despite the protests, Alima could feel the vessel slowly yielding to her will. And why shouldn't it? At its core, Ship was still a machine, and that meant it had been designed to serve. All Alima need do was prove herself capable of commanding it. She pushed harder against its resolve, this time forsaking subtlety for sheer power.
"You remember," she said. "Lumia invited us to her asteroid."
Ship struggled to hold firm, recalling that Lumia had not actually invited the Broken One to her asteroid. Alima had followed her there.
"That doesn't change facts," Alima insisted. "Lumia asked for our help."
Lumia hadn't asked. The Broken One had volunteered.
"And Lumia accepted," Alima pointed out.
She was careful to continue her pattern of stressing important action words. That was a key part of the technique.
"She assigned us to keep watch on Mara."
Ship knew what she was doing, but it was not a sentient being, and it did not have the strength to resist the pressure she was bringing to bear. What the Broken One said was true, Ship realized at last. Lumia had sent her to watch Mara.
"Because Lumia trusted us," Alima said. "Because she was counting on us to continue helping Jason, like we did at Roku Depot."
"When you reconfigured that freighter crew?" Ship asked.
"So the Jedi would know we were near when Mara died," Alima clarified. "So they would suspect us instead of Jason."
"To ensure his success," Ship added. "To ensure that the Sith would rise again."
"Yes," Alima agreed. "We promise. The Sith will rule again."
In the next instant, Alima found herself pressed against the rear bulkhead as Ship accelerated skyward. A sense of frustration flooded the Force as one of her pursuers, Zek, judging by the labored purity of his presence, alerted his fellows to her escape. Jaina's reaction was not discernible, but the fact that no one launched a shadow bomb or a proton torpedo at Ship told Alima all she needed to know. For now, her hunters had more pressing matters on their minds. The journey to the Cans sector was as uneventful as it was unnerving. Ship seemed to take a special delight in taxing her composure, flying most of the way with a hull so transparent that Alima felt as though she were traveling across the galaxy in a bubble. For a spacefaring species like the Duros or Gans, the illusion might have produced feelings of exhilaration and awe, but not so for Alima. Twi'lek were cave dwellers by nature, born to the snug comfort of total darkness and tight spaces. By the time Ship entered the unnamed system and a silver nugget of rock appeared in the vacuum ahead, every instinct in her body was screaming for her to close her eyes, to slam shut all perception of the brutal, sickening vastness of the galaxy. Alima ignored those instincts, forcing herself to watch calmly as the nugget swelled to a tumbling stone, then to a dust-caked boulder glinting in the light of the distant sun. Shep was testing her, searching for any indication that she was too weak to make good on her promise, and Alima refused to provide one. She knew that Shep could see in her thoughts how terrifying she found the void, but she also knew that it could sense the resolve with which she faced that terror, her utter willingness to sacrifice anything to restore the balance between her and Leia. When the asteroid had grown so large that nothing else could be seen ahead, Shep swung around to its dark side and made a breakneck hangar approach. Sensing that it was still trying to rattle her, Alima resigned herself to the possibility of a fiery death as the price of flying such a fine vessel, then watched in stoic silence as murky crags swelled into looming cliffs. At the last possible moment, a camouflaged blast door slid open, and Shep shot into the hideaway's cramped hangar, decelerating so hard that Alima had to force-anchor herself in place to keep from being hurled into the forward bulkhead. Shep stopped almost a meter from the far wall and extruded three landing struts, then settled onto the hangar floor, hissing, creaking, and groaning as though it were the Millennium Falcon. Alima allowed herself an enormous smirk of victory.
"Satisfied?" she asked.
Shep let out a final disgruntled rumble. Then, once the hangar had repressurized, shaped a door and ramp for her.
"Wait for us here," Alima said, rising. "You may as well top off your fuel and tend to your maintenance needs. This may take a few hours."
Shep seemed amused by that, and Alima had the distinct impression that it expected her to be here much longer than a few hours. Forever, probably.
"In that case," Alima said, descending the ramp, "if we fail to return within 100 years, consider yourself released."
If Shep made any reply, it was lost to the dark side aura that began to rise around her as she set foot on the permacrete floor. The energy was so thick it was almost tangible, a cold cloud of gloom that trailed up her thighs like lover's fingers. She shuddered with what she thought were pleasant memories, until the shuddering continued and an icy knot of danger sense began to form between her shoulder blades. Traps. Of course there were traps. This was a Sith hideaway, was it not? Alima opened herself to the Force and felt a sharp sense of peril from the far wall of the hangar, where 2 dozen coolant drums stood stacked in a triangle 7 meters high. The smart thing would have been to climb back aboard ship and flee before one of those drums exploded. Instead, Alima started across the hangar at a sprint. Ship's surprise was exceeded only by its alarm. It seemed less concerned about Alima than about her orders. If she wanted to get herself killed, that was fine with Shep, but she couldn't expect it to—
Stay!
Alima put the weight of the Force behind her thought command.
My turn to test your nerve!
Shep withdrew its presence in a huff, leaving Alima free to concentrate on the problem of the coolant drums. The knot between her shoulder blades was growing colder and tighter by the second, and of course the danger seemed to be emanating from the bottom of the stack. Without breaking stride, she made a clutching motion with her hand, and the middle barrel slid out of line. As Alima floated the drum across the hangar to meet her, the rest of the stack crashed down in a cacophony of sloshing liquid and ringing metal. Several barrels burst, pouring hundreds of liters of viscous blue fluid onto the floor and filling the air with the caustic sweetness of hyperdrive coolant. Alima already had her lightsaber in hand. Ignoring the burning pain that the fumes brought to her eyes, she ignited the blade and slashed the top off the drum in front of her. What she found inside was a barrel full of beradium with a proton grenade detonator, enough explosive power to shatter the asteroid into hundreds of pieces. A thick harness of multicolored wires ran from the detonator to a digital timer currently displaying the number 10 and counting down by seconds. Next to the display was a red disarming switch. Rejecting the switch as much too obvious for Lumia, Alima deactivated her lightsaber and dropped it, then frantically began to sort through the wire harness with her one good hand. By the time she found a single gray disarming wire, the display read 3. She started to pull it, then recalled how Lumia had nearly killed them aboard the Anakin Solo by mistaking a proximity sensor feed for a safety delay. She released the gray and grabbed the most orange of the 3 orange wires. When no warning chill raced down her spine, she held her breath and jerked the wire free. The timer reached 0. Nothing exploded. Alima felt her one leku uncurl in relief. She recovered her lightsaber and, coughing violently from the hyperdrive fumes, turned to Ship with her brow cocked in triumph. Ship seemed unimpressed. There were 100 ways to die in Lumia's sanctuary. Certainly one of the most foolish was standing in a cloud of coolant fumes to gloat. The vessel had a point, Alima had to admit. She crossed the hangar to the hatch that led into Lumia's chambers, then began to work her way past the gauntlet of traps that had once protected the privacy of the Dark Lady of the Sith. First, there was the flechette spray behind the false control pad at the entrance. Then came the airlock with the reversed controls and the poison decontamination shower, followed by a clever force illusion of Lumia herself that somehow transferred the damage of any attack directed at it back to the assailant. Alima really wanted to learn how that was done, once the throbbing inside her skull subsided enough for her to concentrate. Finally, Alima found herself standing inside the foyer of Lumia's suite of chambers, her leku prickling in anticipation of the wonders she would soon discover. Each of Lumia's traps had whetted her appetite for Sith technology, and each time she had defeated one, her expectations had risen. Whatever Lumia had been trying to guard, it was obviously very important and valuable. Alima began to have visions of a Sith megaweapon, something that might be able to bring the Galactic Alliance to heel with a single demonstration. Or maybe it was something more subtle, such as an artifact that allowed one to read an enemy's thoughts from afar. Maybe she would find both, or a whole cache of strange new Sith technology. All those traps had been designed to protect something. Alima started by focusing on her Force awareness, looking for any cold places or disturbances that might suggest a nexus of dark side energy, then quickly gave it up as hopeless. The whole asteroid was suffused with the dark side, so much so that she almost felt as though she were snug in the dark nest again, surrounded by the familiar presences of her fellow Gorig. It was a bittersweet sensation, one that threatened to undermine her safety by lulling her into a false sense of security. Alima advanced to a careful reconnaissance of the quarters. With a handful of beige sleeping chambers, a keep-paneled study, a vaulted dining room, and a sunken conversation parlor, the suite was comfortable enough. But it was hardly grand or opulent, far from the kind of place that one would expect someone of Lumia's power and resources to call home. There was no artwork or memorabilia to make it feel inhabited, though the full-length mirrors on every wall did hint at Lumia's vanity. Somehow the mirrors always seemed to reflect Alima at the best possible angle, concealing her disfigurements and accentuating her still svelte figure. She was enormously pleased, but that did not prevent her from cautiously checking behind each one to make certain it did not conceal a safe or hidden doors. Unfortunately, she discovered no secret chambers behind the mirrors, or anywhere else in the suite. The only hint of a secure room was an ancient synthwood door tucked in back of an old-fashioned kitchen. The infrared ovens and particle-beam cooktops were too clean to have been used any time recently, but the door was the only locked portal she had found in the entire suite. Alima checked for each kind of trap she had encountered so far, then for all the others she had been trained to identify. Finding none, she opened herself to the force and ran her hand over the door's surface, alert for the faintest prickle of danger sense. She felt nothing. Whatever trap Lumia had placed on this door, Alima could not find it. And that could only mean one thing. This was where the Sith treasures were hidden. Alima stepped back, taking a moment to calm her pounding heart and consider how to attack the problem. There was no question of leaving the door unopened. To restore the balance between her and Leia, she had to turn Jason into what Leia hated most, another emperor. To turn Jason into another emperor, she had to be able to control him, to stop him from doing foolish things like taking the Jedi Academy hostage. And to control Jason, she needed leverage. Leverage such as the Sith artifacts hidden behind that door. After a few minutes of calming exercises, Alima's heart finally stopped pounding. She felt confident that she had considered the problem from every angle, and still she could not figure out how the door might be trapped. Her only resource was her knowledge of Lumia. The Dark Lady of the Sith had been a sophisticated and subtle woman, someone who planned in layers and took great pride in reading her prey. She would expect anyone who had made it this deep into her inner sanctum to be as cunning and complex as she was, and her trap would be designed with that type of person in mind. What she would not expect was an intruder who acted like a common thug, who took the easiest, most direct route to what she wanted. Alima took a small concussion grenade off her utility belt, then used a dab of synth glue to affix it to the door over the lock. She retreated into the adjacent room and used the force to activate the trigger. There came a silver flash and an ear-splitting bang, and a cloud of black smoke rolled into the dining room. Once the smoke had cleared, Alima braved a shower of fire suppression foam to return to the kitchen. The door in back was hanging twisted and half open. In her excitement, Alima barely remembered to check for more traps, but she still didn't find any, sprung or otherwise. She activated a glow rod and peered through the charred doorway into an old food storage closet. The shelves were lined with cybernetic supplies, tools, fluids, replacement parts, all the equipment Lumia might need to maintain her mechanical half. As far as Alima could tell, the little room did not contain a single Sith artifact. Completely forgetting her own safety now, she slipped past the door. An overhead glow panel activated automatically, filling the chamber with soft white light. Along one wall she found a huge stockpile of powdered mixes for the protein and vitamin drinks that had served Lumia's half-cyborg body as food. On a low shelf on the opposite wall, she found a few power cells and extra strands for the Dark Lady's light whip.
"Spare parts?"
Alima felt herself swelling up with anger, the frustration and fear of the search stoking the fire inside.
"Protein drink?"
She swept half a dozen powdered protein canisters off a shelf, then kicked out in the opposite direction and sent flying a carton of sharpened kyber crystals. That felt so good that she ignited her lightsaber, then caused a sour-smelling cascade of hydraulic fluid by slashing open an entire row of plastoid jars.
"We want artifacts!"
Alima swung again, cutting the supports from beneath a high shelf.
"We want Sith treasure!"
A cybernetic arm came crashing down on her, battering her about the head and shoulders. She shrugged it off and started to bring her lightsaber around to hack the offending part into so much chaff, then noticed a finger-length data chip holder lying in the hydraulic fluid near the open end of the arm's selenium casing.
"Well, what have we here?"
Alima deactivated her lightsaber and retrieved the data chip holder.
"Could you be the reason Lumia kept this door locked?"
She stared at the fibroplast case as though waiting for an answer, which, in a sense, she was. After a moment, she began to perceive a faint ripple in the Force, the barest hint of the last emotion she had expected to encounter. Hope, perhaps even comfort.
"Interesting," Alima said. "What are you?"
This time she did not wait for an answer. Despite what Ship believed, she was not that broken. Instead, she looked for more data chips, first searching through the other cybernetic supplies, then the kyber crystals she had scattered across the floor, and the other cartons of lightwhip parts. She ended by emptying every canister of vitamin drink and powdered protein into the growing mess on the floor. There were no more data chips to be found, though Alima did discover over 1 million credits in generic chits hidden inside some of the protein canisters. She left the currency on the floor with everything else she did not want. Credits she could get any time, and stealing them was always so much more fun. Convinced there was nothing else to discover in the food closet, Alima returned to Lumia's study and inserted the chip into a data pad. She expected to encounter a request for a password or some other form of security. Instead, a hooded head appeared on the display and instantly began to speak.
"Our apologies for the brevity of your journey."
The speaker's face remained hidden in the shadows beneath his hood, but the voice was male and full of dark power.
"Had we foreseen the speed of the invaders' advance, we would have sent a more sizable escort. Should you survive and care to reach us on your own, the navigation string attached to this message will guide you. Once."
The figure appeared to lean away from the light, and the display went dark. Alima extracted the data chip, then sat back to consider. She had been taught as a young Jedi that only 2 Sith existed at any one time. The dark side drive for personal power always prevented them from establishing a larger order. But Lumia had once hinted, in the missile hold of the Anakin Solo, as she made preparations that might involve sacrificing herself to kill Luke Skywalker, that there were more than 2 Sith, and that their plan for the galaxy did not necessarily involve Lumia's survival. The figure in the message certainly supported this idea. At the least, he seemed to be part of a larger group. Alima returned the data chip to its holder and started for the hangar. Clearly, she had set her sights too low. She did not need Sith artifacts to guide Jason to success. What she needed were the Sith themselves.